podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It's Neil Atkinson, joined by Phil Blundell, by Dan Austin, and by Adam Melia. Ash O'Rourke and Andy Heaton doing different forms of producing between the two of them. Download the Anfield Wrap app if you want lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of shows, audio and video about Liverpool Football Club and the city in general. You get tokens if you wanted to sample some of them. That exists. It is a thing. The season is drawing to a conclusion, but we know it will be a big summer. It may become a big summer of recruiting people for a Champions League run. We'll talk about that in a minute or two. We'll talk about Curtis Jones. We've obviously got Trent Alexander-Arnold on the list. Clean sheets and the nature of the opposition. We're going to get into the big picture as well. But we will start off, Dan Austin, with Leicester City 0, Liverpool 3. And it was remarkably professional. It's been such an odd season of performances. We've talked a lot prior to the game away at Leeds about Liverpool against the side at the bottom of the table and how they got dragged into all sorts of nonsenses. Since then, they've gone to Leeds, they've gone to West Ham, now they've gone to Leicester. I think that they've shown a lot of professionalism, a lot more control, and last night was arguably the most professional and the most controlled of all of those games.
I think all seven of the games that they've won consecutively lately, they've been really intelligent in, which is a marked difference from the majority of the season that went before that. It reminded me of being at Leeds the other week last night, in that you're playing against a team in a very difficult situation at night away, where there's a possibility of a big atmosphere and they're going to start quickly. And your job is to respond to that. So Liverpool didn't need to come out of the traps and kind of try and blow Leicester away or set it up as a back and forth, both sides on the attack kind of game, like Leicester had there on a similar Monday night only a couple of weeks ago against Everton. Liverpool just needed to be clever and patient and take the sting out of it, and that's what they did for half an hour at Elland Road, and it's what they did, it felt like, for half an hour last night as well. Leicester started okay, you know, played some decent passes forward, didn't really create an awful lot, but looked like they had a bit of belief in themselves, and by keeping hold of the ball when they had it, Liverpool gradually eked that away and away, made the crowd quieter than what it was at the beginning of the game, and then made everything else just so much easier for themselves. That's the kind of game that I think a couple of months ago Liverpool would have found hard from the start and would have found ways to make it harder for themselves as it went on. But now, through a combination of the tactical change, the fact that, you know, each individual player is in a really good run of form, is more confident in what the fella to his left and to his right is going to be doing as well. But also the fact that they just know how to respond to small bits of adversity. Like, for example, Jamie Vardy being in early in the game and Leicester having a bit of a chance in the past. Liverpool, I think, would have panicked there. Would have thought, bloody hell, are we doing this again, are we? No one was bothered. Everyone just cracked on. Keeper saved it, as he great. Let's keep the ball more for a bit and then score. And that shift in attitude, I think, has underpinned, yeah, the whole last 6 weeks or so, really. And it was good to see them doing it again.
It was good to see them doing it again, Adam. It's, for me, it is the controlled aspect of this. And it is, we've talked a lot all season about Liverpool encouraging poorer sides. I mean, all football teams can get encouragement at different times, but Liverpool, it's felt like they've encouraged poorer sides. And this is, as Dan argues, it is the marked opposite. You know, Leicester are basically informed over the course of the first hour of the football match that it's none of their business. And then the last half an hour becomes pretty much a non-event. That's just sparked by Alexander-Arnold's goal and Salah's miss. They're the only real sort of things of note. And I really mean that as a compliment. There just hasn't been enough of this campaign.
Yeah, and another word that might not sound complimentary is predictable. I think we've become quite predictable in a good way in these recent away fixtures, more than the home fixtures in a different way. But you I guess the pattern that you can set in an away fixture against a team that you should be beating is that you can you can wait out almost the first 20 minutes. And that with our increased belief, having, I think, gone behind at West Ham, didn't we? Yeah. And then gone on to win. I think that was a big moment for me, because I think the performances had improved. And it's funny, isn't it? It's what is it that's actually changed, because there was plenty of games earlier on in the season which we ended up losing away from home where we started better than we did last night. So you know, it is almost a decision to be a bit more taciturn, a bit more boring, a bit more grown up, and the things that have changed that I can think of. They seem to like each other now, which is something that's grown gradually. There has been a change in system. Their ball sticking, I think the ball sticking in all areas of the field is something that's changed, which, you know, you could probably read as a criticism of Darwin earlier on in the season, maybe, and that's certainly a compliment to Gakpo in the time since we've signed him. So you sort of, you know, you do search around to see what's happened, because there was never any doubt in my mind that we were going to win comfortably last night, to be honest. And that's what I mean by predictable. I listened to the first half on the radio, and I thought you can tell. You know, I used to like listening to Liverpool on the radio when we were flying, because it'd be Salah. You'd hear Salah's name all the time, Salah, and you'd think, well, we're going to beat Watford 5-0 today. And it's not it's not like that anymore. It's you can sort of hear the commentators, they you know, it always feels like the commentators support the other team anyway to me, even though it's Danny Murphy and he should like us, but they sort of, you know, they're up because they're thinking, oh, Leicester have got a chance here, Leicester are doing all right, and then it's like, ah, oh, Tielemans not doing enough, is he? You can just feel the midfield struggling, you hear the crowd quieting, and then it's sort of, there was almost a moment last night where Liverpool went, all right, let's turn the screw now, and it became a matter of time.
It does become, I think, a matter of time is, you know, Phil, we were in the ground, and I was so, as Adam says, I was just so certain from almost immediately after that Vardy miss, really, before, and then as soon as he doesn't take that chance, I think, well, that's it. Now, you're not going to get another one of note. I'd be surprised if you do. Say what you want, Leeds took their chance. Say what you want, West Ham carved one out. But I don't really think you're going to be getting three or four of them earlier in the season. One of them made you think, could be another three or four of them the next 5 minutes. And as both Dan and Adam have sort of said or alluded to, that's just completely dissipated now. And that's the level of control that Liverpool are able to occupy in these games.
That's the big thing for me, that the giving the other team opportunities, and we were giving them. They weren't like carving us open. We were just leaving gaps everywhere, and press was dysfunctional, and players didn't look like they were doing the right thing, making bad decisions in the wrong position, and so on and so forth. And the goalkeeper was bailing us out time and time and time again. He's made something like 102 or 103 saves this season. That's a ridiculous amount for a goalkeeper of a top, well, six. To be honest, it's probably even too many for a top half side. It's the type of thing you would expect someone in the lower half of the league to do. And he'd still concede 50 goals as well. That's what we've put him through this season. And that's just stopped. He makes the one from Vardy, which wasn't a huge chance when you actually look at it, because I think I was sort of directly behind him. There was nowhere for Vardy to put that ball. There's the one he pushes around the post from Harvey Barnes, which is half a chance really, isn't it? It's not a big chance, I don't think. And they've dried up these big opportunities that we've been giving teams, and that's sort of the most telling aspect of what we've done in the last 6 weeks for me. Because we even remember the Chelsea game. Chelsea is what, 11 games ago?
Yeah, 11 games
ago. He was our best player. And we've picked that up, that's what, 6 weeks, 7 weeks ago? And it's such a huge, huge change in terms of what the team looks like and what we're asking players to do and what players are making their teammates do or not do in certain instances. It is a lot more controlled. It's a lot better. It just looks like a football team that you want to watch, and you're sort of looking at it and going, well, I can see what we're doing next season now. Whereas if you go back to that Chelsea game, you were thinking, what are we going to do? I don't see it. And now you can see it. And that is, it's such a positive, I think.
That's the big part, I'll come back to you, Phil, on it, of the bounce, I think. We can talk about, and we will talk about, the Champions League place, I've said about the big nine. And for me, my thing from the start of it was that it needed to, I remember saying after the Chelsea game, let's just give Curtis a run.
Yep.
And you give Curtis a run now, because we'll know by the end of it either way. We'll know. And I think, first and foremost, we do know, we'll come on to talk about Curtis. But I think also the other thing we know, regardless of which league position we finish in, whether it's fifth, whether it's fourth, whether it's third, whether or not there's some sort of cataclysmic event, Arsenal and Manchester City get docked 30 points each, and we find our way to clatter even higher. The point is, for me, the most exciting thing is, I wrote it last night, I want to talk, or yesterday, you know, I want to be talking about 10 consecutive wins. I want to be talking about 14 consecutive wins. And that can seem mad, and it can seem unbelievably arrogant. For me, it's not about the arrogance. It's about the fact that they look like they know how to graft. And that is what they've shown all the way through this run as well. It's not just being that they're playing nice stuff. It's that they're working ever so hard off the ball. And then when they get it back, they're looking after it so well. And they're taking real care. And care is what was missing, I think, in the early part of the season. And it's back now in abundance.
Absolutely, absolutely. There was a... they didn't look like they were just playing with any confidence or belief in themselves. When you're doing those things, you get careless because you're sort of, you're not doing what you're supposed to. When you're thinking, you're overthinking, you're underthinking, you're doing all kinds of things. But the thing that they've made me think now is I'm not actually that bothered if we come fourth or fifth, if we win the last two and we've won nine in a row, because you know what you're looking at. Like, there's a way you could come fourth and get the Champions League and feel more despondent than you would if you come fifth and win your last nine, because you're looking at it and going, well, that's nearly a quarter of the season.
Yeah.
Nearly a quarter of the season where you've won every week.
Well, 10 is, and the game before is a 2-2 draw against Arsenal, exactly, where they have really hard lines.
Yeah. It would be, it's 11 unbeaten as well if you get to the end of the season having won every game, which is, that's over a quarter, nearly a third. This is not small numbers of games of football we're talking about here. And we've started keeping clean sheets as well. That's three on the bounce.
Yeah.
It's such a change, and it sort of makes you feel just happier about everything. Like, because I couldn't have envisaged sort of during March, or, you know, walking out of Bournemouth, at, what was that, the 11th of March, something like that, and going, well, I'll feel positive. In 2 months' time, I'll really want to watch them play in August. Because there was a point to me then that was like, well, roll on the summer, and can it be longer? Whereas now you're like, right, let's get these players in, let's get pre-season. Like, we're on the car back today, we're looking at, right, when's pre-season, when are they back? Who are they playing in friendlies? What's going on?
I want them to do the fixtures the day after the last game of the season. Yeah. At this point, like, can they just do the fixtures on that Monday, please? That'd be great, so we can all work out what we can plot a route, we can plot a course.
And that's what they've done the last 6 weeks.
For me, the other thing that they do in this game, and that they have done, is turn the screw. And that, again, it starts as a slow process, turning the screw at times. I think in our minds, you know, we've talked a lot about fast starts when Liverpool have been struggling, Adam. Turning the screw, I think, matters. They do it in this game. They could win by more if they'd really wanted to put the foot down. I think that they could have done. They could have found a way. But I think they were enjoying the idea that they had total control. I think as much as they were enjoying the notion of maybe going and chasing something. Goal difference might become a thing, and they might rue the day. But as was also said in the car on the way back, if I'm ruining anything, I'm ruining Salamis and penalties at Bournemouth. I'm not going to rue the idea we didn't put four or five or six past Leicester in the end. But for me, the turning of the screw is the most important part.
Yeah, and I think turning a screw requires a functioning midfield. I don't think you can turn screws without one. And so I think I would put a lot of this down at Curtis Jones's door. If you're thinking about yourself playing in a midfield three and you're away, you are soaking up pressure to start with. And I said on a show a few weeks ago, although I've liked the things that Curtis Jones has always had in his game in terms of creatively, I liked that he was bringing the other side in, and I thought he was really effective at Leeds away, deeper, and I quite liked his sort of his more muted showing starting from then. But then the turn of the screw, I mean, it's a perfect example, and that is starting to be his trademark goal. No, I mean, is that he's going to score it twice? But there isn't another. I can't remember the last midfielder we had that scored that sort of goal, to be honest. And I think there is definitely something there where, you know, the players that you can kind of think of, I guess, is, you know, his contemporaries. You've got like Mount or Foden. Those sort of midfielders are not something that you can have that I've got in my mind. You know, in terms of when we say we need some more goals from midfield, I suppose as Liverpool fans, we kind of think of like Gerrard and, you know, those types of goals where really I love this sort of thing where you've got, I'm sort of going back to the mist of time again, but I remember watching Keenan's goals once in midfield away, and they were both deep, and then they just, you could almost see them say, all right, well, now Scholes, you go. And Scholes scored about 5 minutes later. And it's that sort of thing. And I think that's why Curtis popping up as he does just sort of sums up exactly what I'm talking about. And in terms of the run of games, we've sort of laughed about the big nine thing, but you could sort of see it coming. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't the maddest thing in the world. It's a bit of a silly sort of like trademark that you've got, but you could see it coming. And it's not after timing at all. We had those three difficult games in a week: Chelsea, Real, and Arsenal. City,
Chelsea, and Arsenal.
City, Chelsea, and Arsenal. And then after that, it was like, well, after that, let's sort of see. I think I was saying like workshop. I just want to see sort of us workshopping something exactly as Phil said before. I don't really mind where we finish. I think if we start doing the things right, it'll end well. You know, and we are there now, and we're saying, you know, it doesn't. I'm sort of, you know, I'm sanguine about it either way, really. And I think we're probably in many ways happier than the Man United fans at the moment. They're two places above us, and that will all come out in the wash next season. But it you wouldn't be at all surprised if we're the team that kicks on better than a number of the teams above us, at least one of the teams above us.
Adam talked about before, Danny talked about the ball sticking, and Curtis, the movement for both goals is exceptional. The finish for both goals is exceptional. But the 90-minute performance, or more accurately, got substituted yesterday. For me, the performances as a body of work, one of the main things is just that the ball sticks and the ball stays and Liverpool get up the pitch. And that's what Curtis has brought, I think, massively. Before we even get into the idea that he might be developing a trademark goal, which I'm banging into, I'm into the fact that first and foremost, Liverpool have got a way to get 30 yards from the opposition goal, and Curtis Jones is so important to it.
I've thought a few times lately watching him that he'd be really horrible to play against. And the way he was kind of moving across the line last night from left to right made me think exactly the same. There were so many times when he picked the ball up in a ludicrous amount of space, and I think that's ludicrous in both senses. In one sense, that Leicester are woeful and were not doing an awful lot to stop him or anyone else. But also because he was just moving so intelligently and knew exactly where to be, has obviously built up an understanding with the people who were around him, because Liverpool have played pretty much the same side now in the vast majority of these games. And then when he gets it, he looks after it. His decision-making is really good. He knows when to take a risk and when not to. I think one of the criticisms that people have made of him in the past is that they've perceived him as quite like a conservative player. I think the way that Liverpool's midfield was working previously invited that. Because, you know, if you think of the way that like when Alden used to play, for example, it was asked of him in order to do that. But the getting Liverpool up the pitch thing has been vital, because that's the thing that Liverpool was struggling with, I think, most throughout the course of the opening portion of the season. Obviously, going backwards, the defence was exposed and Liverpool were conceding an awful lot of goals, but also there were three men in attack, and that was it. And there came a point in about October where those three men stopped pressing as well, and then the whole thing just sort of fell apart. It felt like Liverpool, through neither passing nor carrying the ball, were able to really get themselves up the pitch. It had to be, it goes into one of the three and they do it. And it's really hard to do that, because if you're one of the three who's doing it, you've basically got to run past someone, beat them, then stop on the ball on the touchline and wait for everyone else to catch you up. And that's why Liverpool were really quite bad. Jones, by being able to move across from left to right in that way, means that so often there's a ball 15 yards in front of you that you can play, and then you're 15 yards further up the pitch, you need it to the goal.
And you've got the ball completely under control.
The three in attack are then able to move about. You can trust them to not lose it. His first touch is great. And then when he's around the box, he's such a genuine threat as well. I think people either forget or don't take into account enough that, like, when he played for the youth side and stuff, he was a forward, really, wasn't he? He was the main goal scorer for that team when he was coming through, and he was the captain. And whenever he's done good things for Liverpool, it's been in and around the penalty area. He played really well against Napoli at home when he hadn't played in a long time, and he played off the left
side front forward.
At the start of that game, when he was playing, I mean, even in the European Cup like 3 years ago or whatever, Adam mentioned the sort of trademark goal. He scored against Ajax at the back post, didn't he? When he tapped one in from a Nico Williams cross, he knows how to do that because it's what he's grown up doing. It's not necessarily so much becoming a trademark as it's just a thing he's got. It's a skill. It's a piece of movement and a finish that he's already got. And he was doing that 3 years ago in the European Cup against a really good side. So a lot of these things are great, and it's brilliant to see him doing it, but they're also not that new. It's harnessing things that were already there that maybe in the past couple of years, in major part because of the fact that, one, Liverpool have been worse this year, and secondly because he struggled for minutes for various different strange sounding injuries, it seems, haven't quite been there, and he's been asked to play in much more of a flat three where his job is just keep the ball, don't lose it, try and win it back, give it to the fullback on your side. That's your job. now that he's able to kind of express himself a little bit more with the new way that Liverpool are playing, it feels like it's just absolutely brought the best out of him. And I think he's a joy to watch at the minute. I thought he was electric last night. He's been brilliant for weeks, but that to me was a step above anything else he's been doing. And I really liked in general from Liverpool, my favourite passage of play was immediately after the second goal when he won the ball back and Gakpo was in one-on-one, but maybe should have scored, but it seemed like a decent save at the same time. And watching Jones absolutely busting the gut as Alexander-Arnold carried the ball down the right, desperate to get forward again, desperate to put pressure on, and desperate to score. He just looked so pleased, not just to be scored, but to be playing well for Liverpool. Both of the times in the ground, they put the thing on the board to say that the VAR was getting checked and stuff, and we had no idea how close it was or whatever, or whether it was going to get given. And both times when the referee just sort of calmly pointed at the spot to say that it was a goal, he turned around and gave it the fist pumps again to the away end, which I really enjoyed. He just looks like he's loving playing football, and everyone at the moment is loving watching him do it.
I was wondering, as he went through, I was thinking, how close would he have been to the fastest hat-trick? It couldn't have been far off. It was probably certainly tight to Fowler's. I don't think it was quite Mane's record when he was at Southampton, but it can't have been far off the Fowler one against Arsenal, which would have been ridiculous, wouldn't it, for just rifle three in the space of about 4.5 minutes. But no, he was brilliant, and he has been for a long period now, which it's not just the fact that he's been good, he's been available, the manager's gone with him, he's shown faith in him. It's not been that he's been grabbed off on 60 either, is it? Now, the first couple of games, he was getting an hour and he was sort of feeling himself in. And now you just see a player full of confidence, and it's a really big demonstration of what happens when you give a young player with obvious talent some time instead of just judging him straight from the off, which is a lot of people did.
Because everything's transfers, the idea that Liverpool should change the number of midfielders that are interesting to me isn't valid, Phil. No. I think Liverpool should still be looking to get the three in, no shadow of a doubt. But what I think it does is whatever signing Liverpool make to compete with Jones in that area, it doesn't feel to me like someone needs to come in and save the day. I think that's the change. There's time for footballers, whoever they may be, that Liverpool end up signing, to bed themselves in a little bit, to add to what's already there, but also to feel as though they can bed themselves in a little bit. That's one of the major things that's changed. I still want Liverpool to get the best players they can. I still think they should do three midfielders and all of that. But it isn't as though whoever Liverpool might have lined up, who they think can alternate in that position for Jones, compete with him for that position, if they're going to keep playing this way, and I see no reason to change it. It's not as though, for instance, you're thinking whoever it is has just got to come in and hit the ground running. Whereas in February, I thought Liverpool needs to buy about 63 players and they all needed to come in and hit the ground running because, my God, someone had to run. Now it doesn't feel like that at all. And I think that puts the club in a better position when they're being able to think about what it is they want to do.
It's just a lot easier, isn't it? You don't have to sit there on the first day of next season and go, well, you three, you've not been here more than 2 months, use the midfield now. We don't need to do that. You can bring one in. I don't mean one transfer. I mean one player into the lineup, playing with two who are established and know exactly what they're doing. Then a bit later, it's the other one. And then it's two of them. Then maybe it is three of them. But it gives you the opportunity to sort of build them in, as opposed to just go throw them in and go, right, well, you've got to do it. And it's a huge thing, I think. I think on numbers, there's a bit of a weird thing where people look at the fact that Milner, Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keita are going to leave this summer, and that sort of makes you think, well, we need three. But when you actually look at the number of minutes they have contributed this season as midfielders, it's basically nothing. You could replace that with one. I'm not saying do replace it with one, but in terms of the difference that then two or three will make to the overall picture, it is huge. It really is huge, bringing in sort of two lads who will play 2,500-3,000 minutes in place of three lads who have contributed about 500 minutes of midfield this season, which is what the three of them have done. Like, I think Curtis Jones has already played more minutes in midfield this season than the three of them combined, which when you think his second start was, what, the
game against Chelsea,
2nd of April or something, is a ridiculous thing to have happened. And it sort of shows you where it is in terms of how you build it up, as opposed to just sort of it completely just being ripped to shreds and completely built from the bottom.
I was just going to say, it's just worth noting that there was nothing inevitable about it either. That Curtis Jones getting back to where he's from, just in terms of, you know, having listened to and joined in with a season worth of podcasts and sort of seen all the other things that have been said. He was definitely spoken about in the same breath as, you know, Ox and Naby, that was kind of the bin file, basically. You know, that was, you know, that will probably, you know, some or all of these players won't be making it. And to sort of claw his way back through just belief and skill, and despite us not understanding why he wasn't getting picked for quite a while, and thinking that maybe some other mysterious reasons, probably injury related, that underline it, but that may leads to the end of his Liverpool career at the end of the season instead of what's happened. It's worth kind of remembering where we all were. I don't want to speak about everyone, but I certainly wouldn't have been saying 6 months ago this will definitely happen.
Okay, that is the end of part one. Breaking the show into two parts this week. That is the end of part one. Back in a minute with Trent.
It is the post-match pint, our post-match video from the Anfield Wrap.
After every Liverpool match, the Anfield Wrap brings you the post-match pint.
Yes, the Reds, it's the post-match show. After Leicester 0, Liverpool 3.
Fouad Hassan is filming this on a bus. It's chaos.
Home, away and in Europe, the post-match pint brings you our immediate post-match reaction. To access this and loads more, download the Anfield Wrap app or join our YouTube members.
Could not get better than this.
Welcome back, Trent Alexander-Arnold, then Dan. For me, what's interesting is I think Leicester had a bit of a plan. They were trying to stifle him and they were trying to stop him. And then one of the things that happens, and I think Leicester at the minute look the least robust team in the country, and given the fact that they're not even bottom, I think that is quite staggering. It just looked to me like the energy, the idea of trying to stop him takes up both mental and physical, just waned before your very eyes. And in the end, he just has the run of the game. And this is back to the idea of Liverpool playing themselves in. They gave it the best shot for 20, 25 minutes, and then the pitch was Alexander-Arnold's.
I thought he made it look so easy yesterday, playing that role, which is probably one of the most difficult ones in the entire league, because he is still doing the right-back things from a defensive point of view. At times when a team tries to break, there were so many moments in the second half in particular where Liverpool are working the ball around a box and maybe a Leicester player gets a nick on it, or the ball's headed away or whatever, and it drops towards Alexander-Arnold's side of the pitch, and someone went to challenge him and he just held them off in the most casual way you've ever seen, just batting them away like flies, and it was quite stunning to watch, really, just how faultless the vast majority of it was, because it's all round play. It's not like you stood there and just saying, oh, you know, there's this lad stood playing in the centre circle, spraying balls left and right and setting this up and that up. It's every facet of being a really good footballer, really. All of the physical stuff, stamina, speed, strength to hold these people off, but then the technical ability to not just play passes like he is, but the things that he's seeing, the way he positions himself around the edge of the box and all that sort of stuff. He just looks like he's having the time of his life. And that means that you really enjoy watching him play at the minute. And again, I mean, I said it about Jones, but him in particular, I think if you were somebody playing for Leicester who had been instructed in some way that you had something to do against Trent Alexander-Arnold, whether you were a centre middle, whether you were Harvey Barnes playing left wing, he must have just been a nightmare. And if you're already feeling a bit rubbish about going out and playing football because you've been in such a bad run of form,
yeah,
and then first sort of 15-20, he's doing that kind of thing and setting Liverpool on the attack, and then for that one that was almost the third with Gakpo just kind of taking it to you, even when you've already kind of given up the ghost of the two goals in quick succession, then that relentlessness must just be exhausting, really, to come across. I think each time he kind of gets better at this, I'm increasingly in awe of it, because as I say, the sort of dichotomy between the difficulty of what he is doing and how easy he makes it look is just stunning.
He seems completely bedded in. I thought Robertson seemed more settled too. Again, let's be clear about the opposition throughout all of this. I think, you know, and obviously the way the game state changes with those two quick goals does, you know, remind them why they are at the bottom of the table, Phil. So it is worth pointing that out. But it all seems very, very bedded in. And as Dan says, for me, there was a ball recovery he just made in the second half where the ball just... It's just like, I think Leicester thought, we're away here. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't quite a tackle. It wasn't quite an interception. But he's there to say, right, this ball's now mine. And look, lads, sorry, it's now going the other way. And it felt like at that moment, I just sort of thought, like, it was almost like the strings of Leicester had been cut. They were just a bit like, come on, more of this. How's this happened? Stuff like that. You know, you can talk about the goal and it's a brilliant, beautiful free kick. You know, you can talk about some of the passing range and all of that. But it's stuff like that that is what is exciting me as much.
Yeah, was it the one where he sort of chased back and then cut across him and sort of just came around with the ball and then pinged it? And it's just like, there's not many footballers who are able
to
do that,
this. Yeah.
It's really exciting that this hasn't had the pre-season yet. That's the thing that I'm looking at it and going, well, this is good. But imagine when he's taking them away to Germany or wherever he's taking them and they're just going to work on this for 4 days. Imagine what it's going to look like, genuinely, when he's able to know exactly where all the players are running, where all the players know where he's going to put the ball, where the player knows, well, hang on, he's there now, so I've got to do that. It feels like sort of the start of something which is quite exciting. It feels a bit, in some ways, sort of 2017-ish, early parts of 2017, when you could sort of see what Liverpool are building to, and you knew there was so much more to come, there was more players to come in, there was like more ideas, more freshness. There's players here who'll be, you know, like Gakpo gets another pre-season and gets to learn a little bit more about what he should do. Because I think with him, for example, there's things where you can see he's not quite right. And there's the same for loads of this, that it just gets better. You know, Diaz as well, for example. I don't think Diaz was particularly brilliant last night, and you can still see he's trying to find his way back into things. But you give him the pre-season, you give him more football, everything, and it's all linked around this phenomenal footballer from Liverpool. And it's just very, very exciting what he's capable of doing. I think there's, you know, it won't happen, but there's an England squad coming out soon, and why England wouldn't just use him in that role, I have no idea, but they won't. And it's mad that that won't happen, and it won't even be thought of. And there'll probably be someone in the press going, maybe you should try this, you know, and they just won't. And it's mind-boggling.
I find it quite difficult to talk about, and it's for some of the reasons that you've just said, Phil. Partly the other reason is, as I've said before, I sometimes feel like I'm in a film of Trent's life, and we're just sort of in, you know, we've been through some mild peril this season, and now there's, and so I don't know how the film ends. It might end with him scoring the winner in the World Cup final. I don't know, but yes, yeah, I'm interested to see in all seriousness what this actually looks like when we are playing some good teams, because we have, you know, the thing about this run is that we have had, you probably couldn't have designed it better in a sense, which is why it did look from the outset like a good place to workshop things. I would be really interested to see what happens at Old Trafford next season, just as an example. You know, are we really doing this? This is what I suppose I'm saying. It does feel really, really bedded in, and yeah, and I completely get what Phil just said, really. Sort of the 2017 pre-Virgil, I guess. And so there is a case to say that in 12 months' time, we'll be like, yeah, it was great then, and then that happened. So I think there's something to come, basically. And it could be the pre-season, it could be a player. There's something still to come.
On the good team's point, though, Adam, and I think it's a really valid one, like, for instance, what does it look like when you're playing up against Carlos Vinicius Jr.? Not Carlos Vinicius. That's a lot of Fulham played up against him recently. It was fine. Vinicius Jr., when you're playing up against him, what does the, you know, could, yeah, if that happens, what does this look like? I think that's a really valid point. But Liverpool have ended up where they've ended up this season. We've ended up chasing this last Champions League spot because, frankly, we've been, by the standards that are expected, absolutely appalling against the poorer sides, especially away from home.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is, you know, that's the big thing about this run. We've got one more of them to play. That'll be the fourth one in the run of 9 games. And just, you know, ultimately the way you win the league is that you look at the bottom 10 and you find a way through taking 58 points off them. That's what wins you the league. You know, that's what City have been absolutely incredible at. It's what Arsenal, I think, it's what brought Arsenal to the party this year before. They've sort of ran out of steam in every sense. You know, they get the really strong start of the season because, and they do it last season as well, they're really good against the bottom sides, home and away. So as far as I'm concerned, I completely agree with you. And what will it look like in a big semi-final? And what will it look like when you've got 20 minutes of the opposition being absolutely on top in their own ground, which can happen. But for now, I'm just looking at it thinking, well, if this is the pathway to 58 points from the bottom 10 next season, then absolutely bring it on.
Yeah, I mean, and that, I think you mentioned it before. I don't know whether the show has started at this point, but you know, you'd love the fixtures to come out the day after this season finishes, because that is, I mean, that's the unspoken and random part of football, really. But Arsenal got their good start because I think they had some they had a good first 10.
They played a lot of people at the right time.
Yeah, they did, and I think we played a lot of people at the wrong time. And you know, you never know. You can pick some and say it's better to play, you know, such a team before Christmas. It's probably a nice time to play Wolves now, for example. But yeah, there's. Instead of five times in January.
But yeah, when you're on the verge of a collective breakdown, it's not the time to play Wolves four times.
Yeah. So there is you are right, and I guess it's just, I suppose the other thing is, what do we do? How do we react when it goes wrong? Kind of thing. That's the other thing when somebody does work it out. Because I think earlier on in the season, well, I mean, we've been trying things with Trent for a while, and
yeah, years.
To be fair, us trying a different thing with Trent is potentially one of the things that ended up with us not getting the points we needed last season. I think, you know, I didn't like the thing with him in the channel at all last season and the start of this. So it's a case of how we react to that adversity, and I think that has been, I suppose, it's sort of the same thing as mentality monsters. That is the difference between Jurgen Klopp's good Liverpool teams and their bad and his bad Liverpool teams is, you know, was in 2017-18 we suddenly learned to be all right with conceding a corner, conceding a goal, and it all rolled on from there. And then this season, and you know, the other season where it went downhill, it seemed like we couldn't deal with it, with adversity. So that's the other exciting thing about this new thing is sort of how it deals with stress testing.
The stress testing that they are getting, it's a limited amount. The goalkeeper is incredible. I mean, there's, you know, Dan, all the bits of goalkeeping yesterday. It's a really funny thing to say, because other than the early one, you know, there isn't loads to do, but he offers you such security all the way through. Both centre-halves, I was thinking about it when I'm pulling this agenda apart, you know, with players we're going to talk about, et cetera, et cetera. It sort of occurred to me, the testament to the centre-halves yesterday is that it's difficult to sort of pick a moment out, because there was just so much was getting dealt with at source. I think Fabinho, as possibly his best performance on the road this season. There might be a game I've forgotten in the first part of the season where he just pulled something out, but I think it could well be his best performance of the campaign. You know, he's screening them marvellously, supporting everyone around him. That unit of four feels like it's in really, really good shape at the minute.
Yeah, the goalkeeper's marvellous. That Vardy chance that we referred to earlier, we were at the right angle behind it, whereby you could just see that the goalkeeper had made himself a size and a shape that Jamie Vardy couldn't kick it in the goal. It was not really possible. He would have had to have somehow beaten him, like gone around him somehow and then kicked it in the goal. And he's got a split second in which to set himself up once the ball kind of squirms through to him. He's just brilliant. And you know, the really poor stretch of the season would have been a damn sight poorer if it wasn't for him. The other three were great. I thought Van Dijk in particular was kind of stepping out onto things in front of Vardy, for example, and just winning them back extremely easily and stopped them ever building up any sort of momentum or head of steam. But for all four of them, all of their lives are being made easier by what's happening in front of them. So, you know, Alexander-Arnold being next to Fabinho makes his job a significant amount easier, first of all. The fact that the midfield is functioning. But to my mind, the most important thing that's making all of their lives easier is that there is a press in attack again. Because for months and months, there was not at all. Remember, I can't even pick one out because there were so many of them. But games away this season where, I mean, Brighton was the nadir in many senses, I think. But I remember watching Levi Colwill just stood on the ball so many times and nobody went near him in the Liverpool attack that day at any stage. Brighton were just allowed to play their way out in whatever way they wanted under no pressure. And now it's a total...
It was the nadir as well, because I think that was the game where everybody thought we'd probably lose today. It's the, you know, the opposite in the predictable.
No, nobody that we spoke to that was staying over or it was in the away and thought Liverpool were going to win. And when the players trotted out and sort of jogged towards the away, and not one of them like clapped or looked up at it in any way, shape or form. So the psychological difference from them is massive. And part of it is that the forwards run again. They chase people. They don't give them time on the ball, and that means then that if Salah's chasing down a centre half, for example, and he still plays the ball into midfield, there's then more pressure on the midfielder because the Liverpool midfielders are able to step up further because Salah's done a shot and so on and so forth.
What's interesting,
and that means that everybody else is able to take more confidence in their defensive shape, and that's what the manager was talking about earlier in the season when he was saying we need to defend better. He wasn't saying the defence is shit. He was saying everybody needs to defend better.
On that, what's interesting, post was we were on the road together and I came down. The game's about to sort of wrap up and I'm stood with you and Rob. And you turned to me and you went, I tell you what, Fyce has done all right here. And Rob goes, I think he's been terrible. And my thing about that is that no, but that used to happen a fair bit where you could take one view of what Liverpool were doing to an opposition player. And you could go, my God, he's having a stinker. Or you could go, under pretty difficult circumstances, he's holding it together all right, you know, because this isn't easy. And that, for me, that's what's changed. That's what you were describing there in the attacking. Yeah. Both with and without the ball, Liverpool made Fyce's life really, really hard. So if you're a compassionate human, then you can say, my God, he's doing all right under difficult circumstances. And if you're a soulless gutman, then you can, you can slaughter him.
Well, but I thought that Ruth Fyce's teammates were making a knobhead of him.
Yes.
And that happened to loads of Liverpool players in the early portion of this season.
Yeah.
Where you'd look at someone and go, is no one going to help him? He's having a really hard time over there, quite understandably, and everyone's just going to fucking watch on and go sound then.
Just let them work the ball into that area.
That's what watching him last night felt a bit like. So I think I did sort of pity, but in some way admired him at the same time. But now the difference is that every Liverpool player stands up for one another. Everybody tries to make the man's life in front of him, behind him, to the left, to the right, that little bit easier. And it doesn't necessarily mean doing something brilliant all the time. Sometimes it just means making a 10-yard shull so that the space is a little bit tighter when the next pass goes. And it looked like in January, February time, they had no interest in that whatsoever, doing it to help other people. But now everyone's doing it all the time. And that, to me, is genuinely the biggest thing that's changed with Liverpool.
The opposition then, just mentioned Fyce there. We can maybe have a chat about whether or not we thought he was any good. Just really, it was so funny the way Dan just went. He's done all right there. He's absolutely terrible. There is Phil with them, you know, because we've been allowing so much hope this season. It's worth reflecting on the fact that we've done a good job denying it to Leeds, West Ham United and now Leicester. I would be very disappointed if Liverpool don't achieve the same thing at Southampton, and it would need some explaining to me if that doesn't now happen at that point. But Leicester do just look shot. There is, in every sense of the word, in a footballing context, they look spineless. There is no spine through the middle of the pitch, and the players are not robust in any way, shape, or form. We've had a nice time in Leicester there. I don't really want them to go down other than the Leicester County versus Leicester City aspect of their support. The City of Leicester is a wonderful place. The County of Leicester that turns up to support them, not a great set of lads. But I just don't see any way they survive. They look, to me, like they're a shell.
Yeah, I think part of the problem they've got, and it's sort of related to the phrase, they're too good to go down. Well, the reason that these teams that are too good to go down is because the players are sort of like, what am I fighting for here? I can just go where I want next year. And you're looking around that team, and in terms of talent, I'm looking at that team and thinking there's six of them that could probably do a job in Liverpool's squad. Like, Pereira's had problems with injuries, but he was very good 3-4 years ago, and you're thinking, you know, if he was back up right back, I'd be all right with that. You're then looking at Samara, who I thought was reasonably good at winning the ball. There's James Maddison's obviously very talented. There was Tielemans, obviously speaks himself in terms of what he's done in the Leicester shirt for the last, what, 4 years or so. There's players there who you're looking at going, well, these are all right. But it doesn't work like that, and they got themselves into a position where I just don't see how they win a game of football. I don't understand how they were trying to score a goal last night. And that's as much to do with us as to do with what they look like. I just didn't get it. It was pathetic, frankly.
On pretty much warm-up, I spoke to Pete Selby, and Pete said two things. One is that he thinks there's a chance that basically of the squad, only six of them are still at Leicester next year. And the other thing he was like was, well, we're down. And I thought, my God, because Peter was quite an upbeat character as well. And then I watched that last night, and I can see exactly why he's watching the games. He's invested in them. And I can see exactly why he's watching those footballers going, well, they're getting relegated. They're getting relegated.
There isn't a way of playing, which is quite clear in any sense. Like, they haven't got, well, this is how we set up defensively, really, nor this is how we try and go forward. But more than anything, I think when they hired the manager that they did, and it's not even about him or how he plays footy or how good he is, but the fact that it's blatantly not a person that they wanted or believed in, he was just available, I think meant that you go from sacking a manager that deserved to be sacked and that the supporters wanted to go, and they actually made it a psychological negative. It should be the bounce. It should be, well, we get to at least do something different and feel like it might possibly be better, to is this seriously what we think we're now going to be doing? And if all the supporters feel like that, then the squad of players will as well. I think as soon as they did that, they put sort of the own final nail in their own coffin, really. And they just seem to have got more miserable ever since. I haven't watched them play yesterday and a few times on the telly lately. I'd be surprised if they got another point from the last two games, to be honest. They look miserable, and I think by far the worst side in the league at this point.
And Southampton exist.
Yeah, genuinely worse than Southampton. There's no way that, for example, I think that they would have gone and scored the three goals that Southampton did at Arsenal only a few weeks ago.
The point you're making about Pete Selby then, I thought was quite interesting, because I used to live with a lad who supports Leicester. He's your season ticket, but he certainly goes to the match, and he's been very negative and very down on it for months. And I've been a bit like,
come on, yeah.
Like, really? Are you sure about this? Like, and he's been like, 2 months ago, oh, we're going down. And they were probably about 14th at the time. And then you watch it, and you're like, what is this?
But also at the same time, if they just got themselves a goalkeeper in August, they'd probably be 12th and be fine. That's the start of everything that comes afterwards.
That and defending set pieces. If they'd done that, they'd probably have 5 more points. 5. It sounds...
Or just
Madison
scores a penalty against Everton.
Yes,
don't. I think that there's been a few games. That was my one where people have watched Leicester and thought, "Oh, these are terrible." And I said I listened to first half on the radio last night. It started with them saying both sides really need to win. By half time, they were like, "Oh, Leicester are down. These are down." And yeah, out of all the bottom 7 or 8 teams that I've been supporting that aren't Everton, Leicester are the worst.
I remember,
just had a weird season, because I remember they played Tottenham, and I think it away, and I think it did it finish 6-2 or something, and I think they were 1-0 up and 2-1 up or something like that.
Yeah, Son came on and scored a hat-trick.
Yeah, that was it, yeah. And they really genuinely quite good, picking Spurs apart at will. And I know there's a conversation about what Spurs have been like all season, but they looked like a competent football team, and then it's just seemed to completely and utterly fall to pieces, to the point where just don't know what they are. They're bad.
It's funny, the relegation battle, because, you know, obviously we've been keeping more than one eye on it this for the whole season. It's weirdly not that hard to stay up. Like, and they still, like, Everton have proved it. Everton basically just won a game.
It's like a win every month.
And they're staying up. It's not that hard. And it's just weird to watch a team be so poor for so long, and it must be absolutely... I don't know what the word is if you're supporting that team, because imagine the level of frustration of knowing it isn't that hard to in terms of
you've
the points
you just
got to
turn up once.
Yeah, it's at once, that's what Everton keep doing seemingly.
any other business anywhere across the board? Nope. Okay. The bigger picture then, Adam, keeping the bounce going. The league table is, you know, we can do with a little bit of the overview. Newcastle got Brighton at the end of the week. You feel as though we could do with them dropping points in that one. Draws and defeats are very similar for Newcastle and Manchester United, realistically, if Liverpool do the job and win their last two games. Draws and defeats almost equate each other. So we could do with Brighton doing us a bit of a favour in that one. You don't feel as though Leicester will get anything at St James's Park, if we're all honest about it. Chelsea have got a role to play with their games coming up against Manchester United as well. United have got a tough one this weekend at Bournemouth. But for us, I just want to keep the bounce going. Win the last two, Liverpool, just win the last two, and we'll see where we are at the end.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I've sort of said, I've been very, very made my peace with the whole Champions League thing. But I mean, is it today the anniversary of Alisson's header? So, I mean, when we do get in the Champions League, we quite often get to the Champions League final. So that is exciting. It's not just like, Arsenal getting in the Champions League. Or
no, no, no.
Not sorry to downplay Arsenal.
No, it's a real football
really,
thing, yeah.
You know, if we sort of...
Oh, Tottenham getting in the Champions League,
exactly.
And wasting everyone's time.
Exactly. So certain teams, it is a bit like what are you doing? You're wasting everyone's time. But if we did manage it, then there are all sorts of exciting things opening up. And if we don't, then you know you can certainly see the positives, and certainly see how we don't really deserve to be in it anyway. I've got no idea about how well Newcastle and Man United are playing. I've seen Man United a few times. They seem to be playing that well, but they seem to be winning 1-0. And I suspect that they will, that they probably both will get enough points. My feeling around it is that we probably will not quite just make it. But yeah, as I say, if we did, then there's all sorts of exciting things opening up.
I think the thing we've got to look at is Newcastle's inability to keep a clean sheet. I think it's something like, is it 2-15 or something ridiculous like that? It's a really bad run they're on in terms of giving teams hope. Now, we talked about, we didn't give Leicester any hope, and maybe the lack of hope just completely demoralised them. But Newcastle might give them that bit of hope, and it looks very different. If, I mean, that's me just trying to.
If either of them were from North London, Phil.
Yeah.
If either of them from North London, then I'd be thinking we've got a chance. Yeah. Here. But I don't see the fans doing that same thing that the North London team seem to do at this stage of the season.
I think the interesting thing is that the really difficult game for Newcastle is Thursday, and if they don't win that, they basically need to win their last two. And all of a sudden you've got like, oh, well, we need to win two games here. Like when it's 2 from 4, which it was, it's like, oh yeah, this will be fine. But then when it's 2 from 2 and your last one is Chelsea away, and you can say what you want about Chelsea, but if we had to win our last two games and the last one was Chelsea away, I wouldn't be thinking, oh, this is good. I'm happy with this. I'm happy with how the position we're in here. You'd be absolutely bombing it for the 4 days after, was it? I think they play... play Leicester Monday, so they've got a Monday, haven't they? Like a Monday and then a Sunday, and then there's no game in the middle, I don't think.
No, I thought there was, but there isn't.
Thursday, Monday, Sunday is just a horrible little schedule to end the season with. I wouldn't feel very good about that, regardless of who I was and who I was playing, really.
Especially when the Thursday, Monday thing, well, especially when their game is built on sort of athleticism and physicality and grinding a team down. Like Leicester have got a week off.
Yeah.
And like, it might be that Dean Smith suddenly finds something. It probably won't be because they're really bad, but it can happen. Like I've seen, like I remember when the reverse.
I just imagine Dean Smith watching the video from last night. It's grim. It's like Scandi Noir, to be honest with you.
The reverse fixture.
Sitting next to John Terry.
John, I know. That sort of thing.
But the reverse fixture was actually one of the ones that really helped us 2 years ago I think that was on a Monday night as well, actually. And I think did Newcastle 3-0 up after about half an hour or something when we needed them to win, basically. And it's just a mad game football, and who knows what'll happen.
Indeed. Last little thing I want to talk about. There's obviously a number of departures at Liverpool on Saturday. Last games at Anfield for a large number of footballers. One of them, Roberto Firmino, was very much serenaded last night. The other thing that's happening though, Dan Austin, you talked about it briefly on the pink last night, is that in the 7th minute there's a tribute to Dan Kay.
Yeah, there's going to be a round of applause that people are going to do for Dan, who people will know as a writer who worked for Liverpool Echo on football, but he did an awful lot of work on Hillsborough over many, many years. He made a big contribution to the Anne series that was on ITV1 maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago at this point.
Maybe a few months or so, and Dan
was a great fella. Basically, he was a big part of the Jewish community in Liverpool. He was a big part of the city's media landscape and stuff like that, but the match going Liverpool community as well. Dan went everywhere with Liverpool over many, many decades, and an awful lot of people knew and loved him, and he passed away very unexpectedly last week. So there was a funeral and a memorial, and as part of kind of honouring his life, yes, people will stand and applaud in the 7th minute against Villa on Saturday. So if you're going, please contribute to that, because it will mean an awful lot to a lot of people.
That's the Anfield Wrap.
Social Podcast Network.